This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and what time is it, kiddies? Well, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. With me today is Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. It's something that many of you anxiously await because, well, I do. I look forward to my weekly colloquy with Layla, with whom I work on a daily basis at our practice in Manhattan. And Layla, it's nice having you aboard once again. How are you?
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Good, good. How are you doing?
Good, good. You sound a little echoey there. This week we're doing this via Skype.
Yes.
Usually we actually literally do this on a face-to-face basis in the office, but today is a home work day for both of us. So yeah. What's going on with you?
Well, we just moved, and things are in a bit of disarray, and we don't have our rugs down yet and things, so there are boxes, there's some furniture, and a lot of echo.
Okay.
So, listeners, please, I apologize in advance if it sounds a little spacey on my end. That's the reason.
You know, there's a tried and true radio fix for that, is if you get like a beach towel and put it over your head, and we won't
right.
do that.
Well, for me to now go find the beach towel.
You don't even know which box it's in.
I have to.
Okay. So bear with us today.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I guess the big story in the news, it's sort of the big elephant in the room on the health front, is the JAMA study about eggs. And, you know, once again, eggs are bad for you. You know, it's one of those, the incredible edible egg. Remember the egg campaign?
Yeah.
And then eggs, of course, killed you because they were high in cholesterol. Cholesterol was, the demon spawn. And then eggs were exonerated recently because it was, a correct adjustment was made in our attitude towards eggs. Exogenous cholesterol,
guidelines in 2016, they removed any restriction on dietary cholesterol.
Yeah.
From the nutrition guidelines. Yeah.
Right. So, and now once again, you know, it's like those shark movies, you know, started with Jaws, you know, there was Sharknado, then there was the Meg, you know, it keeps coming back, you know, the specter that haunts us of the potential harm that eggs cause. And, you know, of course that resonates, with the message of a certain constituency in the nutritional community, which is that saturated fat is bad for you, animal protein is bad for you, and we want to get on a plant-based diet or a vegan diet. And, I got to say, this is an unfortunate thing, is that, have you noticed in the world of politics, everything is extremely polarized? You know, nobody wants to be a moderate anymore. And the same thing is happening in the world of nutrition. It's extremely polarized between, you know, the carnivores who don't eat any vegetables and are on the zero carbs versus the raw food, plant-based folks who don't even want to eat an egg. And, and now because of social media, they're yelling at each other on Facebook and Twitter. I know you avoid social media as a sort of a personal decision because it kind of maintains your sanity and spares your time. Yeah. But I engage with social media and I just see the same kind of vociferous arguments and name calling in politics and in nutrition. Very, very, a lot of polarization. So we actually have a question from a listener on this subject.
We do. We have an email from Judy. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'd be interested in your take on the recently published JAMA study linking egg consumption to increased cholesterol and the risk of cardiovascular disease.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So let's break it down. You know, so let me just point out something which I shared with you, I think, earlier this week, which is this interesting statistic. McDonald's bought over 4% of the eggs in the U.S. last year.
Yeah.
This is the story from
I was looking at that, yeah.
Gizmondo. Yeah. And McDonald's has purchases accounted for more than 4% of the 43.56 billion eggs produced in the United States last year. Mm-hmm. So they've also gone to a strategy, you know, which is increasing their sales.
Yes.
Which is that you can go to McDonald's and have breakfast all day. You know, uh-huh. And which actually kind of works for shift workers because, you know, a cop or a fireman works overnight or a hospital worker, you know, they're just rolling out of the hospital, you know, at, I mean, they're just going into the hospital, at like midnight, you know, so they can have breakfast before they, at McDonald's, at midnight before they start their shift. You know, it's kind of interesting.
Right, right. So breakfast all day works just like breakfast all day in diners.
Right.
Now, you know, I'm not a huge fan of fast food unless you're very much in a food desert. And for those of you who are interested, you could go to a website. You know, McDonald's does offer the calories and things like that. But before you even go, before you even decide you want an Egg McMuffin for breakfast today, yeah. Go to fooducate.com, fooducate.com. And you'd be interested to know that a McDonald's Egg McMuffin has about 290 calories. It's got about 27 grams of carbohydrates. It's very salty, as is a lot of food that you eat in restaurants, right. Especially fast food. There's a lot of sodium in there. It's highly processed. And there's soy lecithin probably in the bun.
Right.
And
some artificial ingredients, some preservatives. Yeah.
You could look at some of these places to see what you're actually eating. But
so the point, I think, though, is that when we do a study on egg consumption, people record, you know, not necessarily veggie omelets made with organic peppers and scallions
exactly.
and mushrooms, but they also include, you know, some of the processed products that they get at fast food eateries like McDonald's or baked goods, for example, that include eggs, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, egg custard pie, you know, I don't know that much about baking. It's not my forte, but, you know, eggs are incorporated in a lot of dishes, a lot of yeah. soufflés and, you know, different things mm-hmm. like that, that are often made with a lot of sugar. So, you know, when people record their egg consumption in giant studies like this JAMA study, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're having, you know, organic egg omelets when
yeah.
they're consuming their eggs.
But, you know, Dr. Hoffman, beyond that, and we've got a really nice synopsis here from Chris Kresser.
Yeah.
The increase in this study, the increase in relative risk that they claim from eating eggs is only 2 additional cardiovascular events per 1,000 person years.
Right. Right. So can you explain relative risk versus absolute risk, or do you want to tackle that? Because
you tackle that. You
okay,
tackle
well,
that, and then we'll go into the, you know, the problem with observational
right.
studies.
So let's, yeah. you know, take a look at the relative risk versus absolute risk. You know, you mentioned the example of 2 deaths per 1,000. But let's mm-hmm. say that the people who ate eggs, there were 3 deaths per 1,000. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there are 2 deaths per 1,000 people don't eat eggs. Well, actually, you would achieve a 50% reduction in your risk of dying, or you would have 1/3 the risk, I mean, however you want to spin it, if you look at a relative risk by not eating eggs, according to a study like that. However, the real consequences of that is that, you know, for in a sample of 1,000 people, you'd have to have 1,000 people not eat eggs to save one cardiovascular event. That would mean that 999 people would unnecessarily yeah. eschew eggs or, you know, something along those lines. So that's how you can use a statistical manipulation to show that there's some dramatic increase in the risk of cardiovascular disease or death by eating eggs. That eggs increase your risk of dying by, well, I don't know, 30% or something like that if you have three or four eggs per day or more. There's a lot of problems with that way of thinking.
Exactly.
You know, I also want to say that, I mean, some people have accounted for this egg study by saying, well, you know, there's another thing going on besides cholesterol with eggs, and that's something called TMAO, trimethyl amine oxidase. And there is a story to be made about choline, which is an ingredient in eggs. By the way, not in the yolks. It's, I believe it, the choline is, am I correct that the choline is?
No, the choline is in the yolk.
I'm sorry. The choline is in the yolk.
Okay.
No, you're correct. The choline comes from the yolk. And it's a wonderful nutrient. It's a nutrient that we think is extremely important for brain health. We think it's very important in pregnancy. We even supplement it. But in some people, and we're not exactly sure why, it may be something to do with the microbiome composition, the choline gets converted to something called TMAO. And TMAO is thought to be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. The trouble is we don't know in a large population, you know, what percentage of people are going to have TMAO conversion of choline. Or conversion of choline to TMAO, because there's such a variation in the microbiome. And so, you know, I think the way we have to look at this is that, you know, I'm not going to throw this out and say, you know, it's so polarized. It's like everybody's saying, well, you know, I eat six to eight eggs a day and I'm fine. Or some people say, don't eat any eggs, it's poison. I think what we have to say is there may be a case to be made for individualizing recommendations about egg consumption. Is that some people can eat eggs with impunity. I think I'm one of those people. I think I've had at least two eggs per day for the last 25 years. I have zero coronary artery plaque. I have a good lipid profile. Maybe genetically I'm protected, or maybe some lifestyle factors are protecting me. Maybe my microbiome's favorable. I don't know. But maybe genetically there are some people who have lipid disorders, or they have other underlying conditions for whom eggs are problematic, right?
Absolutely. That's why, I mean, the basis of how we practice is individualized nutrition. There is no one diet fits all, and that includes the fat content of a particular diet. But, you know, coming back to this study, observational studies, which is what this is, do not show causal relationships, and therein lies the problem. The results can't be replicated because, they ate eggs, but what else did they eat with their eggs? Did they have the home fries or the French fries, the toast, the sugary cup of tea or coffee?
Now, they try to control for that, but there's so many variables associated with that. I mean, you might say that people who don't eat eggs, they, for some reason, are much more conscientious. They do Tai Chi, for example, or, you know, they meditate.
Right, exactly.
I mean, who, you know, what is it that makes a non-egg eater more protected from cardiovascular disease? If indeed that's the case. The other thing is that these observational studies are based on recall, and recall is notoriously poor when it comes to what you've eaten.
Yes.
I mean, I eat a very regular diet, so it's, you know, pretty much, you know, I don't have a lot of variation. But if you ask me what I had for lunch, you know, last Thursday, I probably couldn't tell you.
You have to think about it.
You know, that's a week ago. Right?
You'd have to think about it, right?
Yeah. And this is a study that went over, you know, many years. So there are even some people who say, look, these big questions of nutrition, you know, what should you eat? I mean, a very fundamental question. Like, we want to know, what should we eat? How much should we exercise? These questions are actually very poorly resolved by big observational or epidemiological studies. And actually, I have an interview with a guy who is a real scholar in this field, Dr. Richard Feynman, who's really a critic of the way that we do nutritional studies. And I think there's been a lot of blowback.
Dr. Feynman of the Metabolic Society?
Yes. Talking to him, planning to talk to him tomorrow. And that podcast, by the time you hear this podcast, I think it'll probably be available for you to listen. You know, we are trying to answer very fundamental, relevant questions.
Yeah.
What should we be eating? How do we live longer? How do we stay healthier? And then we get conflicting answers. Witness studies about meat, you know, pro and con. Mm-hmm. Witness studies about eggs, pro and con. Witness studies about virtually anything, dairy, coffee, and on it goes. And mm-hmm. that's why the public is confused. And, you know, ultimately, we'll lose confidence in us as guides because we don't take a nuanced approach to this.
Yeah, it's true. But I know that you don't want to throw out this study, but I do.
Yeah.
And another reason is that the researchers claim that eggs are the problem when foods such as the souffle you mentioned, Dr. Hoffman, cake, ice cream, all of these were included. How in the world did they single out the egg?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
We have to look at diet in the context of many factors. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of potential variations on how you can utilize and combine foods. It's a real thicket. It's very hard to discern what's going to really make a difference for one individual. That's bottom line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So rest assured, I had a couple eggs this morning.
Yeah, so did I. I had a couple of eggs this morning.
I was undaunted.
Scrambled.
Right. Yeah. Mine were scrambled, and I got these nice coconut wraps. They're paleo wraps.
Ooh.
And they're very thin. I saved some leftover natural bacon that I used as flavoring, and I made like little wraps with the eggs. So
nice.
It's a relatively
like you made yourself like a
carb.
Burrito.
Yeah, this is like a burrito, but very low carb because the coconut wraps are low carb and just
sounds
a little bit
delicious.
Of just a wrap. Okay, so let's move on to other questions. What have we next in the mailbox? By the way, radioprogram@AOL.com. I forgot to mention that's the destination for questions. And we have a pretty good flow of questions, but we need more to keep fires burning here.
We have a question from Larry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I know this is an old subject, but I'm still unsure. And as a longtime listener, I know that I should not be eating bread at all. However, if I choose to eat bread, which way do I go? I don't have a problem with gluten. Do I go with regular bread? I'm currently eating Ezekiel bread with the belief that this provides a lower glycemic load. And as you know, everything is gluten-free now and it's getting more and more popular. Am I on the right track, or should I just resign myself to eating regular bread when I indulge? I'm sorry to go over this again. I'm interested in hearing your opinions on this. So to eat bread or not to eat bread, that is the question for Larry.
Right.
Well, I'd have a lot of questions to ask Larry. First of all, I'd want to take a look at him. I'd want to see if he's overweight or obese or slim. I want to know if he has metabolic syndrome. I want to know what his lipid numbers are. I want to know if his triglycerides are high.
Right.
I want to know what the rest of his diet looks like. What else are you eating? I want to know what your activity level is, what medications you're on, all of that. And
do you have an autoimmune disease, for example? Do you have gastrointestinal problems, digestive problems? Yeah.
Or maybe you have GERD.
Right.
You know, bread is a big problem for anybody with GERD. And it's not just the gluten. Sometimes it's often the grain itself, although gluten really does a job here. So it depends. It depends on a lot of how we would answer a lot of questions or how Larry would answer that.
Right. It's a little like the egg question in some ways, but
yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, there are absolutists, you know, like, you know, the wheat belly guy.
Right.
You know, and to say no way, no how should anyone have any wheat or even any grains because grains are unnatural. That's sort of the paleo ethos.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there are some people who tolerate moderate amounts of relatively low glycemic index breads. You know,
yes.
And what are some of the better ones that if you're not sensitive or allergic or have, SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, you know, that will be okay for you.
Yeah, it could be. And by the way, with SIBO, just as a little aside here, with if you have SIBO, you know, for Larry, I'm assuming he doesn't have SIBO, if he opts for a good whole grain, very low ingredient, low glycemic, fibrous bread, that's fine. But for somebody with SIBO, they're going to have a problem with that.
Tremendous bloating, fermentation,
yeah.
Bacterial
whole
proliferation.
Whole grains are not the friend of somebody with SIBO. It's
because they contain fructans, right? That's the F in FODMAPs, which promotes bacterial overgrowth,
fructans,
right?
Fructans, yes.
Yep, yeah. Yeah. Right.
All of that. So that could be a problem. And again, it is like you say, Dr. Hoffman, it's different strokes for different folks
yep.
in this regard.
Yep.
You know, for Larry, again, it's hard to say, and these would be all the questions that I would ask you. But if you don't have a problem with wheat, if you don't have a problem with gluten, if you don't have a problem with weight or blood sugar issues or anything like that,
right.
or high triglycerides, yeah, indulge in bread on occasion and leave it at that. And there's another question here. There are different ways of craving carbohydrates. For many people, it's cake, it's cookies, it's sugar, it's overt sugar, the way it's found. For other people, they crave starch. They want potato chips. They uh-huh. want mashed potatoes. They want bread. You could put me in that category. I'm not interested in cake. I'm not even interested in chocolate, believe it or not. But if you put in front of me
that's
a
so
fine
not me.
French
yeah.
baguette,
yeah.
wow, try to take it away.
So
it would be that kind of a thing.
You try to steer clear of those.
Yeah. Try to steer clear. Exactly. So that stuff doesn't come in the house.
So yeah.
And, yeah.
I mean, just like, you know, ice cream or something like that is, you know, the rule
right.
in my household is, you know, just keep it out of the house.
Keep
and, you know, if on occasion, I mean, if you're in Italy and there's some beautiful
gelato
stand or something and you want to try some, it's like, okay, great. That's an occasional thing.
Right.
One of the things that I use, a mainstay for me, is I use something called wraps. It's pronounced wraps, I guess. But it's spelled WRAWP, so they're raw. And there's, I get them from Thrive Market, but you can get them in health food stores. And they are wraps that are made without grains.
Mm-hmm.
They come in, and they're flat, so you can actually, say you have, so you want to make a turkey wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you want to make it a little more interesting. You may put some avocado in there, some tomatoes, some lettuce, and some avocado oil mayonnaise because we prefer that to something made with canola oil. And we use
yeah.
these wraps in my household to make, you know, in effect, sandwiches. And they're,
yep.
they're gluten-free and they're paleo. And they are low-carb, but they're not no-carb.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a whole line of these things. They're vegan,
mm-hmm.
they're somewhat keto, although they you know, probably have enough carbs to break a, you know, cycle
yeah.
of ketosis. So that's, they also make, some of these coconut wraps. The veggie wraps are, you know, they're not sponsors or anything. I'm just throwing it
yeah.
out there for people.
Yeah.
I'm
and for those of you, who are really going even further and trying to stay in ketosis, get some nice hearty romaine lettuce or butter lettuce. Romaine lettuce, a nice big romaine lettuce leaf is nice and crunchy, makes a nice wrap
right.
for your, quote, wrap sandwich.
Right.
And the other thing is butter lettuce makes a nice, quote, taco kind of vehicle.
How's that low carb patient that we saw? I mean, she's diabetic and inflamed, and I sent mm-hmm. I sent her in to see you yesterday in the office. Is she really adopting some of these low carb strategies? Is she?
She is. She is.
She really seems all in. I was very impressed with her
yeah,
dedication
yeah.
and sincerity.
Yeah, she is all in. The one,
really hooked,
sometimes
huh? yeah.
sometimes we need to take some baby steps to get there. And that's okay. I applaud her efforts.
Right. Yeah, we really wanted to encourage her. I was so happy that, you know, she came in. She was a smoker. And I said, you know, immediately switch to Juul because the nicotine is less likely to be a problem for you than the cigarettes you're smoking. She has made the switch, and she's very happy. Now, look, I'm not encouraging teenagers to start using the Juul. I think that's terrible. I think they just, you know, get kids. It's a gateway drug to smoking regular cigarettes.
Yeah.
But for people wanting to quit and they're smoking a pack a day, it's very hard. Don't go cold turkey. You need substitution.
Right.
So she is really struggling with a variety of addictions. Mm-hmm. And just very excited for the progress that she's made. She already lost a lot of weight.
Yes.
And she's embracing it. So happy to see that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's pause now because we have more questions, but we need to divide our podcast into two parts.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
What's coming up next? Give us a preview.
Speaking of eggs, Dr. Hoffman, how do I lower my LDL cholesterol?
Oh, okay. We'll tackle that when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series. We'll be right back.